Hello, welcome to Here and Now, Dawlish and Tim Atheria talking newspaper. Today's date is Friday the 14th of November 2025, and I'm Mo Hutchings, team leader of the Blue Team this month. Oh, and a quick happy birthday to the King, I suppose, before we start this morning. So let's meet our first two readers.
Traffic aside, I'm Nev, here as usual.
And I'm Norma Orty.
Welcome, Nev and Norma, and I'm glad everybody's made it because I got stuck in the traffic trying to get here as well this morning, so well done, everybody. Right, so we will start with the headline article from the Dawlish Gazette, which is We Will Remember Them. And the picture is of the crowds gathered round the war memorial at St Gregory's Church last Sunday afternoon, and all you can see is umbrellas. To say it was pouring with rain is an understatement. I was in the middle of that somewhere, and I've never been so wet on a Remembrance Parade in my life. In fact, they gave us nice paper service sheets, so we were all clutching little bits of paper mache by the end of the service. It was great fun. Anyway, the article reads, "The wet weather did not deter Dawlish residents from paying their respects to members of the armed forces and civilians who sacrificed their lives in conflict on Remembrance Sunday. Despite the heavy rain on Sunday, the parade of standard bearers, armed forces, cadets, scouts and guides marched from the Baptist Church on Park Road to the town's war memorial by St Gregory's Church for a service of remembrance and representatives from community groups lay wreaths to commemorate the fallen. This year there was no church service following the conclusion of the event at the war memorial, but Dawlish Royal British Legion warmly welcomed everyone back to the club after the commemoration. Remembrance activities continued on Armistice Day, Tuesday, November the 11th, when a two-minute silence was held at the poppy wall on the railings on the lawn, attended by members of the Town Council, the Royal British Legion, and members of the public. And that was still wet, but not as wet. Right, over to Nev for her first article now then.
Health bosses have denied it plans to close the minor injuries unit at Dawlish Community Hospital until March. However, Torbay and South Devon Healthcare Trust admitted staffing problems have forced the unit to temporarily shut at short notice. The comments come after County Councillor Rosie Dawson claimed the unit will be closed until March next year with no public consultation or announcement. She believes the unit, which eventually reopened in April last year after being shut for 4 years, was set up to fail. The possibility of the unit closing has been described by residents as outrageous and insane. NHS Devon is currently reviewing all MIUs across the county, but the Trust says no decisions have been made. In recent weeks, there have been numerous days when the unit has had to shut, and in 1 week it was only open for a day. The Trust also says there has been low attendance, but supporters argue this is due to persistent closures and uncertainty over the unit's availability. When it reopened last April, it was popular with patients with minor illnesses and injuries. In the first 5 months after it reopened, staff treated 1,300 patients. Councillor Dawson said, "It's one thing coming up with a new model of health service delivery, but leaving this community again with no service is not right. This is short-sighted, weighted against people with lower incomes, and does not reflect the needs of the community. The temporary closures have been ongoing for months." Jeff King, chairman of the Friends of Dawlish Hospital, which campaigned to get the unit reopened, said, "The very point that people will not use the MIU if it cannot give a reliable service has been fundamental to my arguments for the last 10 years. They also don't appear to understand that if the MIU isn't open, the attendance numbers will be down." It was also claimed that the Trust's website was unhelpful by advertising the MIU was closed until further notice. And on Tuesday, there was a notice outside announcing it was closed. Mr. King added, "A few weeks ago, despite information that the unit was closed, when he rang for an appointment, he was seen almost immediately." A Torbay and South Devon NHS Foundation Trust spokesperson said, Since Dawlish Minor Injuries Unit reopened in April 24, we've experienced low attendance rates and ongoing staffing challenges to provide a safe and consistent service. Our attempts to recruit and use agency staff have been unsuccessful, resulting in us making difficult decisions to temporarily close the MIU at short notice at various times, and then moving staff to our urgent treatment centre in Newton Abbot when required. We recognise the disruption this has caused, but ensuring safe staffing levels is our priority. NHS Devon is reviewing MIUs and UTCs across Devon, and we await the outcome of its review. No decision has been made about the service, including Dawlish, and we encourage people to continue to use our MIUs and UTC, and to contact their GP in the first instance for routine health advice. We apologise for any inconvenience caused and want to thank people for their support and understanding.
Exminster residents had a surprise when they went to post a letter. Villagers in Exminster were surprised to find the postbox appeared to have been covered in black plastic. The village post office was unaware of what seemed to be an upgrade after the postbox was out of action. The spokesman for Exminster Post Office said, "This was done with no warning or consultation and no info on when it will be back in action. To save you waiting, if you just need to drop off pre-stamped letters, please put them through the spare counter and we will bag them." The Royal Mail said, "There should be a sign on each postbox, which is being upgraded, to explain what is happening and where customers find the nearest postbox in service. It is part of a nationwide rollout of 3,500 solar-powered postboxes of the future. The new design allows customers to send and return labelled parcels up to the size of a shoebox through a postbox for the first time. Customers can also request proof of posting and track their parcel using the Royal Mail app." The Royal Mail spokesman said, "Our new postbox of the future will offer another convenient way for customers in Exminster and elsewhere to access the Royal Mail services alongside home delivery and collection. Our customer service points, post office branches, lockers, and Royal Mail shop outlets. Signage, which should have been placed on the Exminster post box explaining the situation, was due to have been attached by a member of the Royal Mail staff. Installation of the new boxes takes several weeks, as they are measured and retrofitted individually. The rollout is the biggest redesign of the postbox in its 175-year history. The modern makeover will include a barcode scanner, which opens a drop-down drawer to place parcels that are larger than those that fit through the traditional postal slot. A solar panel positioned due south for optimal sunlight to power the scanner, and a drawer and separate slot for letters." Going to make posting a letter very exciting.
A Dawlish businesswoman and hairdresser has launched her 12 Days of Christmas fundraiser for Saving Pound Dog Cyprus, SPDC. Chrissy Marks is once again raising money for the SPDC. And this year, the owner of Signature Hair and Beauty has solicited support from several Dawlish businesses to create a raffle with more than 35 prizes, including vouchers, hampers, and much more. "I'm overwhelmed with the local support and I'm so grateful," Chrissy said. "I'm excited and an enormous thank you to all those who have supported us so far. Businesses that have donated prizes include Marine Garage, Sampson's, Dawlish Building Supplies, the Brunswick Arms, Ladies Mile, Wild Swan Brasserie, Chip Ahoy, White Hart, and many more besides. Tickets for Chris's 12 Days of Christmas fundraiser are now on sale, and they're only £1, she said. I'm desperate to beat last year's total. In 2024, Chrissy raised over £1,000 for SPDC. And like 2024, this year's prize draw will take place at the Lansdowne Pub on Christmas Eve, called by landlord Andy Barton. Chrissy has produced a poster as part of her 2025 fundraising push, which will soon be put up around Dawlish. A huge thank you to Ian from One Design and our local printers, as he did all the artwork and printing for me as his contribution, Chrissy said. SPDC is a non-profit organisation dedicated to rescuing and rehoming stray dogs to loving homes in the UK, Cyprus and Germany. Chrissy herself adopted a dog from SPDC and has supported its cause ever since. Tickets are available from Signature Hair and Beauty, Mount Pleasant and the White Hart. If you want more information, call Chrissy on her phone on 07 776 214 775.
Now we go to news with Black Swans. They have welcomed two new cygnets. Two new Black Swan cygnets have hatched in Dawlish. Against all odds, the eggs hatched, and now more than a week old, the fluffy youngsters have been venturing out on the water and feeding on vegetation under the watchful eye of Mum Kimber and Dad Bert. There had been fears the eggs would not survive, as the nest was built on a small island in the middle of the brook at Tuck's Plot, at risk from rising water levels. But thanks to efforts by Wade volunteers and the waterfowl wardens, including raising the sluice gates to control water levels and protect the nest, they survived. A spokesman for the waterfowl warden said, "It's such a heartwarming sight and a reminder of how lucky we are to have these beautiful birds right here in Dawlish. Welcome, babies."
Charities, organisations and events have benefited from thousands of pounds from Dawlish Town Council. The largest grant of £5,000 was awarded to assist Teambridge, which improves the lives of individuals across the district through community support services, including assistance claiming benefits and entitlements, and paid for services, including sitting and home care, home help and nail trimming. The charity, which was awarded the King's Award for Voluntary Service, has been helping people in Dawlish, Tynmouth and surrounding areas for more than 20 years. Members of the Town Council's Finance and General Purposes Committee were told that in total, the benefit checks that Assist Teambridge had helped members of the public with had resulted in £550,000 being granted to individuals. Of the 432 inquiries made to the charity, 234 were from residents in the parish of Dawlish. As well as the grants from the Town Council, the charity has also applied for other funding streams and has recently been successful with a grant application to the National Lottery. Councillors agreed the Town Council should be supporting charities that benefit the community as much as possible. Its staff and volunteers provide a range of paid and free community support services, catering to those facing mobility, frailty or sensory challenges. A grant of £1,000 was awarded to the Girl Guiding Dawlish and Star Cross. A spokesman for the guide said, "We're delighted to have received a generous grant of £1,000 from Dawlish Town Council towards our much-needed replacement mess tent marquee, enabling us to update this essential part of our camping equipment." The councillors unanimously agreed that supporting young people in the parish and supporting such worthwhile and important organisations such as Dawlish Girl Guiding is exactly what the grant scheme is about. The committee recognised the importance of supporting young people in the parish, and the group hadn't applied before but was a worthwhile and important cause in the community. A grant of £2,000 was also granted to the Dark River Music Festival. The one-day live music festival is a community event featuring local musicians hosted at venues throughout the town. Councillors asked a representative from the festival about bands confirmed for next year's event, plans for it to become self-funding, and there were queries regarding the signatory process for payments. Concerns were also raised about the admin costs, as the same amount was being asked from the council to grant funding as last year. Councillors also asked about the income made from this year's festival and any profit made from venues. It was explained that the event put its costs low to make the event as cost-effective as possible. Members did also note that the event is very good at promoting and bringing the trade into town. A small grant of £500 was also awarded to Dawlish Chamber of Commerce at Chamber of Trade. Councillor Linda Petherick told the committee the application was for promotions for the Town Council's Christmas event, and the Chamber of Trade had worked very hard with the Town Council to help with the Christmas event.
Well, if you have some spare time and are venturesome, this is for you. Station looks for on-call firefighters. A Tinbridge fire station is looking for new recruits. Dawlish Fire Station have been put out the call for paid on-call firefighters. Come along to our drill night every Wednesday from 7 to 9 to meet the crew and find out more about the role, a spokesman for the fire station said. Those looking to apply must either live or work within 5 minutes of the station, which is located on Oak Hill. Furthermore, prospective applicants must be at least 18 years old and have a good level of fitness and strength and must be able to provide at least 30 hours of availability each week. No experience is necessary, just a passion for helping others and serving the local community, the station spokesman added.
Bowlers in Dawlish are on target for fundraising success after being given a major boost by Tinbridge Council. Members of the Council's Executive Committee have agreed to extend Dawlish Marina Bowls Club's lease on its land and buildings at Sandy Lane for another 38 years. It was only in February this year that it was stretched to 28 years. The club says the extra decade will give it the security to apply for funds from national organisations to be spent on improving facilities. A report to the committee said the club would be able to call on bodies such as Bowls England and Sports England for backing to improve the playing surface, as well as adapt the clubhouse to offer better facilities for junior bowls and women's teams. The club will get the lease for £1 a year, wow, but in return will have to pick up the bill for maintenance, and which the council estimates at around £7,500 a year. It's an excellent club with more than 100 members, said Councillor David Palethorpe, Lib Dem Independent. This will allow them to determine their own future. Council leader Richard Keeling, Lib Dem Chuntley, added, "This is very welcome, and it shows that Tinbridge is pulling out all the stops to help local groups. At 38 years, this is not a normal extension, but it's been done so they can apply for further grant funding. The club had had a lease on the building since 1996, paying £2,500 a year for the site, which has six rinks and is of standards to host county matches. Established as a ladies' club in 1940, it became a mixed club the following year. Currently, there are more than 90 members.
Tinbridge adult smoking is a higher rate than the UK average. The proportion of adults smoking cigarettes in Tinbridge was higher than the average across the UK these past few years, new figures suggest. New estimates from the Office for National Statistics annual population survey show 15.3% of people aged 18 and over in Tinbridge were smoking cigarettes between 2020 and 2024. It was up slightly from 14.8% during the previous five-year period between 2019 and 2023. Across the UK, around 11.8% of adults were smoking cigarettes between 2020 and 2024, making a slight decrease from 12.5% in 2019 to 2023. The local authorities with the highest average percent of smoking were Fenland in Cambridgeshire, with 19.8%, followed by Blackpool in Lancashire, with 19.7%.
More than 1,000 pupils who weren't getting the free school meals will now secure them thanks to a significant change in Devon. Efforts by Devon County Council mean that all families whose income levels allow their children to receive free school meals will now get them due a new policy of auto-enrolment. This means that families who qualify will automatically see their children served their free school meals, something that families have had until now had to actively apply for. Devon said change meant that 21,000 children would now receive free school meals, a jump of 1,000 from the roughly 20,000 pupils who don't have to pay for their lunches now. Families can opt out if they wish. The policy alteration is also particularly noteworthy for schools too, as every pupil who has applied for free school meals attracts what is known as a premium pupil premium for schools. Nationally, the pupil premium was worth around £2.9 billion to schools in the 23-24 financial year. Early estimates suggest the auto-enrolment of free school meals could mean the council's schools receive a collective 1.5 million boost. Councillor Julian Brazil, Lib Dem Kingsbridge, the leader of Devon County Council, said securing the change had been a massive team effort and thanked district councils and schools for their help as well as initial work by the previous administration. Our officers have shown true dedication and drive to make this happen, as it needed government sign-off and there were various bureaucratic hurdles in the way. Issues included government departments trying to locate and then allow access to the databases that held the details of all those who qualify for free school meals. They were either in the wrong department or details weren't all in one place. So it took a really concerted effort from our officers to persevere and not be fobbed off. Councillor Brazil said Devon was the first two-tier authority in the country to secure this free school meals auto-enrolment, meaning it is the first authority to do so in places where both county and district councils operate. He added that some unitary councils, which look after all services within their boundaries, had already secured this auto-enrolment. Councillor Brazil said the extra money would go directly to schools.
More than 20,000 drivers have been caught in 20-mile-per-hour zones. There were more than 20,000 drivers caught speeding in 20-mile-per-hour zones last year. A Freedom of Information FOI request has shown. A total of 20,966 notices of intended prosecution, NIPs, were served to drivers in the Devon and Cornwall policing area in the 24-25 financial year, the FO1 request shows. July 2025 saw the most NIPs served at 2,959, with June 2024 seeing the fewest at 1,181. Last year's figures were the highest for the past 3 years. 23-24 saw 15,517 NIPs served, and 22-23 saw 18,184. If you receive a speed camera activation letter or notice, you'll be sent a fixed penalty, £100 fine, and have 3 penalty points added to your licence. However, you may be eligible for a driver retraining scheme course instead. I know someone who went on one of those courses and they found it most interesting.
Now, this is a sad article. New figures show obesity among final year primary school children in Teignbridge reached a record level last year. The Obesity Health Alliance, a coalition of health organisations, said the data is at odds with the government's target of creating the healthiest generation of children ever. The recent National Child Measurement Programme shows some 1,100 Year 6 children in Teignbridge were measured in 2024-25 with about 19.7% found to be obese. It was an increase from 17% the year before and the highest since records for the area began. Meanwhile, 10.2% of youngsters in reception, the first year of primary school, were obese in 2024-25. It was up 7.8% the year before. Across England, 10.5% of children in reception and 22.2% in year six were obese in 2024-25. Excluding the peak during the first year of the pandemic, the rate of obesity in reception year was the highest since records began in 2006/7. Experts said further years of data are needed to determine whether this is the start of a long-term increase in obesity in reception year. Professor Simon Kenny, NHS National Clinical Director for Children and Young People, said, "These figures are extremely concerning. Obesity can have a devastating impact on children's health, increasing their risk of type 2 diabetes, cancer, mental health issues, and many other illnesses, which can sadly lead to shorter and unhappier lives. The NHS is transforming the lives of thousands of children and families impacted by severe weight issues through its specialist clinics, supporting them to lose weight, live healthier lives, and improve their mental health through a personalised package of support. But prevention is key, and continued joined-up action by industry and wider society is essential if we want to improve the health of our younger generations." The report also found children from black ethnic groups are more likely to be living with obesity, and children in the most deprived areas are over twice as likely to be obese than kids in the least deprived areas. Catherine Jenner, Executive Director of the Obesity Health Alliance, said the data was a stark reminder that poor child health remains a serious issue across England. She added, "Every child deserves the chance to grow up healthy and regardless of their background. The findings suggest that the previous small reductions in obesity among reception-aged children were short-lived, with this year's figures showing one of the highest obesity rates recorded since the programme began. These concerning trends are at odds with the government's ambition to create the healthiest generation of children ever." Health and Social Care Secretary Wes Treating said, "This government will not look away as kids get unhealthier and critics urge us to leave them behind. Obesity robs children of the best possible start in life, sets them up for a lifetime of health problems and costs the NHS billions." He added, "The government is making healthy choices, the easy choices, and supporting families. This is prevention, not punishment, and will help families and the children across the country."
Frailty Centre opens at Newton Abbott Hospital. Torbay and South Devon NHS is launching a new integrated care hub for the elderly at Newton Abbott Hospital to make it easier for older people to receive specialist care without being admitted as a hospital inpatient. Described as a centre of excellence for older people, the Harbour, as it is named, will bring various clinicians together under one roof to provide specialist frailty care, holistic assessments, urgent care, and diagnostics. Patients will also be supported by the Torbay and South Devon NHS Trust Virtual Frailty Ward, where patients receive hospital level care at home. Clinical evidence tells us that older people living with frailty are at a higher risk of losing independence, getting infections, and having memory decline while in hospital. They also tell us they don't want to receive their care in hospital and want to get back home, explained the Harbour clinical lead, Dr. Kath Bart. The Harbour gives us an opportunity to change by wrapping personalised care around our patients at home when they need it the most and helping them to stay well for longer. The first phase of the new service launches this month. And the team is working closely with the ambulance service and care homes to support their residents. Next year, the Harbour will be extended with the launch of the same-day emergency care space for older people who need urgent diagnostic assessment and hospital interventions so they don't have to go to the Torbay Hospital. The service has been designed especially for older people living with multiple long-term health conditions or frailty. Instead of attending a busy emergency department, patients will be able to receive same-day care, support and assessment either through visits to their own home or by attending the calm and welcoming space of this new hospital unit. It's about getting the right care in the right place at the right time, helping people stay well, recover quickly and remain independent for longer, a spokesman from Torbay and South Devon NHS said.
Thank you very much, Nev and Norma. Now, two letters from this week's papers. First one from Hugh Nettleton, formerly the Devon Arms Hotel and the King Billy, now living in New Zealand, writes, I was living in Teignmouth during and shortly after the end of the war. About 1945-6, I found an ideal playground hauled up on the beach between the Old Quay and the Fish Quay. These were two submersible craft of some sort, which were being gradually broken down with oxyacetylene torches. For many years, I've been trying to find out what these were. I have contacted the Teignmouth Harbour Master, the local museum and businesses around that area, all to no avail. I've drawn a complete blank. I'm now living in Auckland, New Zealand, and fast approaching 90, so this is probably my last attempt to solve this niggling mystery. I'm pretty sure they were a submarine craft of some sort, round in cross-section and full of pipes and electrical wiring, with openings, hatches, to gain access to a truly wonderful playground for a young lad. If any readers remember these, it might just stir some grey matter in some elderly folk like myself. I would be very happy to hear of anything they recall. Second one, a shout-out for elves. Ooh. Joe Wright of the British Heart Foundation writes, at the British Heart Foundation, BHF, we're looking for budding elves to spread Christmas cheer and lend an elfing hand in their local BHF shop. Our volunteers are vital over the festive period, and they can get involved in a variety of tasks, from unleashing their creativity and decorating the shop, to helping organise donations and preparing them for the shop floor, to simply being a friendly ear for customers who might feel lonely at this time of year. In return for our wonderful volunteers' generosity, they can expect to make new friends, learn new skills, and receive great in-store discounts, handy for any Christmas shopping, not to mention hot drinks, snacks, and a fantastic festive welcome. You'll also be helping us raise vital funds to support the charity's life-saving research, which helps keep families together for Christmases to come. So, why not put your best elf forward and have a go at volunteering with the BHF? To get involved, pop into your local shop or visit the website. Now, one obituary in this week's paper is Olive Bolt, who passed away peacefully at Croft Lodge Residential Home, aged 94. Her funeral service will be at Torquay Crematorium on Friday the 28th of November at 12:30. Family flowers only, with donations accepted for Devon Air Ambulance Trust. Another death announcement I found on the Undertaker's website is Pat Sharland, who died on the 31st of October. Her funeral service will be held on Friday, the 5th of December at 12 noon at St. Gregory's Church. And one that I'm not sure whether it's been given out in the last few weeks or not, but knowing how well known this person is, I'm going to do it again anyway, just in case. Olive Gill died on the 26th of October. Now, Olive was a teacher and latterly head teacher of the former Dawlish Infant School. She was a stalwart of Dawlish Red Cross and Red Cross cadets. He was also involved in Devon Girl Guiding, taking us to camp as camp nurse. And she was obviously known and well loved by generations of children in Dawlish. Now, her celebration of life is on Tuesday, the 18th of November at 2 p.m. at St. Gregory's Church. So now we welcome our next two readers.
Hello, it's Fran Frank.
And hello, it's Chris Brathwaite.
Hi, Fran and Chris. Nice to see you. Now, the headline article from the Tynmouth Post is headed the same as the Dawlish one. Surprise, surprise. We will remember them. But at least the text is different, and the photo. We have a close-up of a bugler on this one, with the Union Jack flying in the background, and not as many umbrellas in the picture as those in the Dawlish one. And it says, the damp weather did not deter Tynmouth residents from paying their respects to members of the armed forces and civilians who sacrificed their lives in conflict on Remembrance Sunday. A procession of standard bearers, armed forces, cadets, scouts and guides marched from the point along the seafront to the war memorial for a service of remembrance, and representatives from community groups lay wreaths to commemorate the fallen. On the other side of the Den, a poignant reminder, remembrance garden of handcrafted poppies was assembled by volunteers from the RNLI at the stone urn presented by First World War Belgian refugees. The remembrance activities continued on Armistice Day, Tuesday, November the 11th. Tynmouth Mayor, Councillor Kate Williams, was accompanied by Town Councillor Vanda Rudge and District Councillor Pete Williams as she handed over a wreath to the Great Western Railway's poppies to Paddington Train. Members of the public joined the Mayor, Town Councillors and representatives from the Armed Forces shortly before 11 a.m. for a remembrance service and 2 minutes silence. The services were organised by Tynmouth Town Council and Chair of the Civic Remembrance Committee, Brian Hall, MBE, with the Royal British Legion. Over to Fran for her first one.
Well, my first one really follows on from that. There's a picture here of Tynmouth Mayor, Councillor Kat Williams, presenting a wreath to the GWR Poppies to Paddington train. And the heading says, Teambridge Poppy Wreaths Head to London. Poppy wreaths from Teambridge were taken on the Poppies to Paddington Great Western Railway for this year's Remembrance Day ceremony. This started during the pandemic. The special train service picks up and transports wreaths from towns along the route into London. This year, Mayor of Tynmouth, Councillor Kat Williams, was joined by Town Councillor Vanda Rudge and District Councillor Pete Williams to present the wreath on behalf of each town. Then it was on to Dawlish, where the 703 stopped to greet Mayor Councillor Anthony James and volunteer Noreen Goldchild, who helped make the handmade crocheted wreath, which was delivered to the staff at GWR. The service started at Penzance, and this year Queen Camilla joined the event by boarding the train into Paddington to lay a wreath at the station's war memorial.
And my first one is about a holiday lodge application awaiting a decision. Another extension has been given on an application for more than 20 eco-lodges at a derelict Teignbridge quarry, as a decision is still yet to be made. Holden Quarry could be home to 27 eco-lodges, as Wilderness Escapes and Hieronymus Gruff Limited's application seeks to change the use of the land. Initially submitted in December 24, a decision was due in May, but the applicant requested an extension, pushing the date back to September. And now another time extension has been agreed, with a decision expected on or before November the 30th, not long now. According to the design and access statement, 26 of the lodges will be for holiday use only, with the remaining lodge existing for the sole benefit of generating income for a charitable cause. Devon Air Ambulance is named in the document. It would provide a model example of how fully sustainable holiday development can be created and would allow Teignbridge to lead by example in ecotourism. The proposed units will be of bespoke design and construction, built to passive house standards of thermal performance and airtightness, heated by an air source heat pump, and spaced out, fitting around and within the vegetation. This proposal has no new hard surfaces such as tarmac roads, paths, or curb edgings. Rather, the existing quarry track routes will be used. All sounds rather exciting, doesn't it? The existing workshop building on the site contains a bat roost, which will be retained with the sole intention of not disturbing resident bats. Wilderness Escape's ethos is that the accommodation sits within the existing landscape and that visitors will stay within the landscape so to fully experience it. Electric car charging points will be provided according to the design and access statement. The charging points will be located with purpose-built power pods to be located alongside each eco-lodge. The existing entrance to the site, formerly a quarry and contractor yard, would be closed and a new, discreet entrance will be created. This is not the first time holiday lodges have been proposed for this site. An application for 42 holiday lodges submitted in 2017 was rejected by TDC in 2022. I wonder how this one will go.
Minor article. New pillow fort helps Send Betweeners learn. Send Betweener children who struggle in mainstream schools but cannot access specialised education can now learn at a bespoke education space in Teignmouth. The pillow fort, which launched on Exeter Street earlier this month, has been set up so that children aged between 5 and 18 can access lessons that are tailored to their individual interests and learning needs. It was developed by Teignmouth mum Heather Smith Gibsons after she struggled to find opportunities for her own children when she deregistered them from mainstream education due to special educational needs and disability. Heather, who is a qualified teacher and has a background working with vulnerable children, quickly realised that there was a demand for local support for home educating families with SEND. She initially set up a Facebook group where she shared free, interest-based educational resources for parents and carers and organised local meetups for families in a similar situation. The group was so well received that she and some of the other parents set up a few low-demand home education groups and began running educational trips within a local community organisation. She also started some interest-based social groups around niche subjects like manga and Pokemon. I basically created the education environment and social opportunities that my own children wanted and needed, she said. As the groups grew, more parents began asking Heather if she would consider offering private tutoring sessions with the low-demand model she had been developing with her own children. To meet this demand, Heather launched Invisible Ink Ed last year, and the specialist education service has proved so popular that Heather realised it needed a permanent base. As a Teignmouth resident, it only felt right to find a premises here, in a beautiful seaside town full to the brim with learning opportunities, she explained. Children attending sessions at the Pillow Fort vary from those unable to acquire a suitable setting via an education, health and care plan. Some might be waiting for a placement to start, while others may be experiencing emotionally based school avoidance, or those who have chosen to home educate. At the Pillow Fort, learners can access education in their own way, at their own pace, and with the tools they need to succeed via one-to-one sessions or learning in small groups. Heather is Makaton trained, and uses augmentive and alternative communication to ensure that every learner can communicate in whatever way works best for them. Whether they are into Pokemon or roller coasters, they have access to rich, multidisciplinary learning resources, which are neuroaffirming, strengths-based, and flexible. In one session, they might design and 3D print their favourite game character, and in the next, they might use virtual reality to learn Japanese through an immersive experience. Certainly lots of choices. Invisible Ink Ad also provides alternative provision for a local primary school, in-school support for another local school, and specialist courses. Beyond education, Heather provides job opportunities for teenagers with a paid youth employment program, and she is currently working with 4 neurodiverse young people in Tynmouth to help them journey into the working world. She also co-runs a Send Home Education group in Newton Abbott and is keen to further develop collaboration with other local organisations and professionals. She's a very busy woman.
My next one shows a very happy picture of Laura Wall, an artist in Tynmouth, at her studio, probably in her shop, with all her pictures and books around her. And the heading is Artist Launches a Festive Shop Local Campaign. Could you do all your Christmas shopping in your local town? A retailer in Tynmouth believes it is absolutely possible to shop local for all your presents and is working with local businesses to show residents exactly how it can be done. Artist and illustrator Laura Wall is putting together a social media reel featuring independent businesses from around Tynmouth to showcase their best-selling items or products that would make a perfect gift. The reel will be posted on Colour Friday, a UK campaign that offers an alternative to Black Friday, which this year falls on November the 28th, hence the name, of course, Colour Friday. This celebrates local businesses and encourages consumers to support small independent retailers and buy unique, handmade and local products to help boost the local economy and reduce the environmental impact from mass-produced goods. Laura, who runs her art gallery in Tynmouth's Arts Quarter, said she came up with the idea on a walk and that the response from fellow business owners has been amazing. Instead of just one reel, it looks like we'll have enough to do several, covering different types of gifts such as experiences, food and drink, gifts, pets, crafts, and pampering, she said. As well as shops, there are also salons, services and crafters who attend local markets who are keen to be involved. Businesses interested in taking part are asked to comment their product on a video she posted on her Facebook page and Instagram feed. We can show off Tynmouth. It's an amazing place, Laura enthused. Let's do all our shopping here and really shout about it and all the really cool things you are selling in your shops. This isn't the first time Laura has done something for Black Friday. Last year, she created a social media reel showcasing her neighbouring businesses on Northumberland Place and thanking residents for their support.
Right, my next article, Emotional Return to Exeter City After 60 Years. Former Exeter City footballer Bob Rackley made an emotional return to St James Park for the first time in more than 6 decades. Bob, who lives at a Dawlish care home, played for Exeter City between 1958 and 1960, and his trip to watch the team take on Huddersfield Town marked his first visit to a live match in many, many years. Born in Tynmouth in 1940, Bob began his football career with Tynmouth and Newton Abbott Spurs before signing professionally for Exeter City in 1958, giving up an engineering apprenticeship to follow his passion. He spent two seasons with the club, making the A team as well as reserve appearances and scoring in the Devon Professional Championship final against Torquay United. He later played for Bristol Rovers and Oldham Athletic, where he made 19 league appearances and scored 5 goals, including one against Exeter City. He was welcomed back by Martin Wheeler, club historian and curator at the Exeter City Museum, who shared archive photos and stories from Bob's time with the club. The visit also included a full tour of the grounds, where Bob met the groundskeeping team and club officials before taking his front row pitchside seat for the match. Although the result went Huddersfield's way with a 1-0 win, Bob's visit included all the match day traditions from a pasty to a bovril. Bob said it brought back so many memories. It was wonderful to see the grounds again and reminisce after all these years. Thank you to everyone who made me so welcome. Club staff took time to speak with Bob about his playing days and share stories from the club's history. The outing was arranged by the team at his care home, Claremont Manor. Carla Bowman, manager, added, "This visit was very special for Bob, marking his return to a place which meant so much to him. The club truly pulled out all the stops for his visit, and we couldn't have been more grateful for their support." There's a very nice picture of Bob actually stood with their Exeter mascot, who looks like a big lion, right next to him.
Mine is headed Choral Carols for League of Friends. Teen Choral Society will again be supporting the League of Friends of Tynmouth Hospital with its annual Christmas Carol Concert. This year's festive music show will celebrate the recent 80th birthday of Sir John Rutter, who is best known for his Christmas carols and church music. As well as solos from Peter Wood, accompanied by Hannah Spooner and conducted by Elana Jacobs, the concert will include plenty of opportunities for everyone to join in and sing. The event takes place at St. James Church in Tynmouth at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, December the 5th. Tickets cost £10 and include a programme and refreshments. The League of Friends of Tynmouth Hospital continues to work with MP Martin Wrigley and local councillors to fight for the future of the historic Mill Lane Hospital.
Devon's Blueprint for Local Reorganisation. Communities are at the heart of Devon County Council's business case for the future of local government in the county. It's proposing that Devon County Council and the existing 8 district councils are replaced with a single unitary authority while retaining the existing authorities of Plymouth Council and Torbay Council. Councillors will have the opportunity to examine the plans at the full council meeting on Friday, 14th of November, today, ahead of the document being presented to the County Council's Cabinet on Tuesday, 18th of November. The proposal for a Devon unitary council serving around 840,000 residents has been chosen following extensive engagement with residents, partners and stakeholders, as well as a detailed options appraisal. Financial modelling shows this is the most cost-effective and financially sustainable option, with the lowest implementation costs of £33.6 million and the shortest payback period of 2 years, while delivering the highest recurring annual benefit of £28.6 million. Lots of figures in there. To ensure communities have a stronger voice in shaping priorities, 16 neighbourhood area committees would be created, aligned with health, care and local economic geographies. They would bring together councillors, parish representatives, the voluntary and community sector, businesses and public service partners, with a devolved budget and dedicated support team to provide the foundation for local democracy and decision making. Establishing the neighbourhood area committees would not remove any assets or powers from local town and parish councils. A Devon Unitary Council would provide continuity in critical services such as children's safeguarding and adult social care, avoiding the disruption and risks that would be caused by breaking them up under separate unitary authorities. Devon's business case makes it clear that a single unitary council brings coherence, strength, and opportunity for aligning and integrating services such as housing, planning, transport,